Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 445 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, the main man himself, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, sir?
I'm doing great, my man. How about you?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. I'm going to dive straight into the review part of the show. Going to start here. In Croatia, friend of the show, friend of ours, Eddie, Ivana Habazin managed to win unanimously over 10 twos. She's the new WBC welterweight world champion, and also she picked up the interim WBA welterweight title as well. So like I say, 10th round unanimous decision over Kinga Magyar. Habazin now 23-5, Magyar now 14-5, so good stuff there for Ivana. Really happy for her, actually. She's been messed around with the politics of boxing in recent years, so it's great to see her back at the top of the tree now. Moving now to the York Hall in Bethnal Green, London. I was at this card, so I'm going to touch on the undercard first. Obviously, it was live on TNT. We saw Andrew Kane move to 11-1. A knockout for him in round four against Darwin Martinez. Now, 8-20 with two draws. Martinez, like I say, stopped there in the fourth round. Good performance, I guess, from Andrew Kane. I did want to see the odds on that because I thought there's a chance it could go to distance. You know, Kane was coming off a defeat, obviously, to Baluta. And Martinez, we've seen him go to distance more than a few times, and namely to Charlie Edwards. Obviously, Charlie's not the puncher that Andrew Kane is, but I still thought we'd see some rounds. Alois Yumbi as well with a knockout win. He's now 7-1 with 7 KOs. You know, the young, I think, 21-year-old fighter trained by how has my brain just completely gone blank? Ben, what's the trainer?
Davison?
Yeah, Ben Davison. I can't believe that. As if I forgot that. Crazy. Yeah, so Yumbi with the win. He's now, like I say, 7-1. He got in there with Pablo Farias, who once upon a time was a super middleweight, getting stopped by Arthur Abraham about 10 years ago. He's now 32-7 with a draw, like I say, stopped there in the fourth. He was down in the third, and yeah, obviously stopped in the fourth, and I knew he weren't going to get back up off that shot there. Yeah, I mean, obviously, he's a bit chubby, to say the least. This guy used to weigh 40-odd pounds less, or even more than that, because, yeah, probably 50 or 60 pounds less once upon a time. What else did we have? Henry Turner with a win. Again, you know, I said about his opponent, Michael Mendoza, he either stops you or gets stopped. So I didn't think it would go to distance. It didn't go to distance. Henry Turner with the fifth round TKO. It was for the WBC International Silver Super Lightweight title. Mendoza actually had more skills than I thought. You know, I saw this record and, you know, the knockouts and then the knockout defeats, and I thought to myself, he's probably not got much boxing ability. But to be fair to him, I think he was all right. He surprised me with a few of his little moves, but... but yeah, you know, he's a tough guy. Took some good shots. Definitely showed a lot of heart in there. Came back as well with some good shots. You know, I think he caught Turner once or twice with some heavy looking punches. So yeah, Mendoza, like I said, wouldn't mind seeing him again in a weird way. You know, he turned up in great shape. But yeah, Henry Turner, you know, he's a guy that, like I say, I'm kind of semi-high on. and I have seen him now, you know, improve fight by fight. And moving to the main event, friend of the show, Sam Noakes. We had him on 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. He's now 14-0. He's the new European champion, the EBU European champion, so the proper belt there at lightweight. But the one sad thing is that he loses that knockout streak that he had, which was tied with the most knockouts of any, you know, any British fighter who's active right now. Him and Hamza Shiraz were both stuck on 13 knockouts in a row, and he also had that 100% knockout streak, which he's now lost. So he's now 14-0 with 13 KOs, and he's back to zero. Back to zero now in terms of his knockouts. Yeah, went the distance over 12 rounds. Obviously, he'd never been past 9 rounds as a pro, Sam Noakes. And yeah, Yvonne Mendy, the super, super tough Frenchman, took him there. He's now 48-7 with a draw. It was a really good fight, actually. I mean, I think Sam Noakes won it, obviously, in the end, very wide. I think there was most cards, if not all, having it a complete shutout for Noakes. Yeah, you know, look. Mendy is such a tough guy, and even being 38 years of age, he turned up with a chiseled body, and, you know, no one has been able to stand up to Sam Noakes' punches, and he's done that at 38, like I say, and he provided him with a good test, like I say, went 12 rounds, didn't win a round in some of the judges' eyes, and... yeah, it's a box tick for Sam Noakes. I saw him after the fight when he got out the ring. I went over to him and he said, you know, because obviously we joke and actually they announced him into the ring the other night. I almost forgot. They announced him the way that I announce him on this podcast. So for those that don't know, obviously Sam Noakes is from Maidstone. And because he was knocking everyone out, I used to say he's from Maidstone. His hands are made of stone. And he loved it. And then he loved it so much that basically he told the ring announcer to announce him as that. For the first time ever, on Saturday night, live on TNT Sport at York Hall. And that was the one time where he doesn't get a knockout. So after the fight, when I spoke to him, he said the hands weren't hard enough. So yeah, he couldn't get him out of there. But like I say, we knew that something was going to happen for the first time. Was Noakes going to stop Mendy, who'd never been stopped? Or was it going to go the distance and Sam Noakes would actually hear a final bell? Well, that was what happened, the latter of the two. But like I say, he looked really good. Mendy is up there in age, but still, you know, still is a very, very capable fighter. You know, he boxed Denis Barinchik just last year or whenever it was, the year before. And, you know, that guy has gone on to be fighting Navarrete now for a world title. So he's been about that kind of fringe world level for such a long time. The number of fights he's had as well, it's a crazy amount. You know, 56 fights, I think, now. Still never been stopped. He is still, you know, very much a gatekeeper. And if Sam Noakes can't stop you, then that tells me you've got a few years left in your career as well if you decide to... you know, to stick to boxing, which it looks like he will. So, yeah, you know, amazing, amazing performance from him to not get stopped. Amazing performance from Sam Noakes to win that wide, you know, and go 12 rounds for the first time and go all the way to European level now. And that's legit European level. This wasn't a gimme for a vacant title. This was a really solid test, you know. And he's become European champion all the way up to that level with his O intact. You know, the next step up from European is world. So I wish him all the best. I'm really happy for him. But yeah, I think he would have learned a hell of a lot from that fight there. And obviously congrats to Hamza Shiraz, who I'm sure is secretly celebrating that he now holds the record. It's not joint anymore. It's his record at the moment. 13 knockouts in a row, the most of any British fighter who's currently active. That's it for that. Moving now to the Magna Centre in Rotherham, Yorkshire, United Kingdom. I did say on last week's show, if you can find odds on this fight, then it'll pretty much be free money. Huey Fury to win on points against Konstantin Dovbychenko, and of course he did. Over six rounds there. Huey Fury now 27-3. Konstantin Dovbychenko now 10-16 with a draw. Still never been stopped. Such a tough guy. Moving now, though, to the final card to mention. It went down at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York, USA. I'm going to touch on the undercard very briefly. Sergei Derevianchenko now 15-5. I've got to say, you know, we talk about a record being deceiving and you look at some guys and say he's not as bad as his record looks. That is made for someone like Derevianchenko. I mean, I actually, and I know this off the top of my head anyway, but I just want to go back to remind myself of some of those losses. And, you know, the first one come against Daniel Jacobs, right? And it was a split decision loss over 12 rounds. It could have gone either way. That was for Jacobs' world title. That was for a vacant world title. So he could have been champion of the world that night. Then he boxed Gennady Golovkin, and he could have been champion of the world that night. It was a seriously close fight. He was down in the first round, and that is kind of in the end, that sort of cost him a little bit. He would have at least won the fight on one judge's scorecard, and there would have been a point in it on the other two. Jamal Charlo obviously boxed him as well. I can't remember that fight too much. The scores indicate it wasn't a close fight, but I can't remember that one, to be honest with you. His other loss came to Carlos Adames, again a majority decision, and then most recently to Jaime Munguia, in which Derevianchenko, we remember, was down from a body shot in the 12th and final round, and that very body shot that cost him, you know, cost him a 10-8 round, lost him the fight. So all of his losses have been super close, and he's only lost to really elite fighters. So like I say, that record 15-5 doesn't do him any favours. He's one of the toughest match fighters in the world. And I thought he would go the distance against Vaughn Alexander, who's ever so tough, and that was what rang true. Derevianchenko now, like I say, 15-5. Vaughn Alexander down from a body shot in round 8. But got up and survived to hear the final bell after 10 rounds, unanimous for Derevianchenko. Was you going to say something, Eddie?
I was just thinking about his record. And when, like you said, when you say 15-5, and then you look at behind the numbers, see, this is the thing that a lot of guys don't know, you know, with fighters and certain fighters in particular. And you look at their records, oh, he's 15-5. Oh, yeah, this would be a good matchup for my guy that's coming up and has about 10-0, you know. But if you don't pay attention to what is behind those numbers, you would be putting your guy in a dangerous situation, like probably one of the most dangerous situations you could put him in. And it's like he literally could be undefeated if you think about it. If the ball bounces a little different, you know, here and there, he could be undefeated. That's just unbelievable. It just shows how tough boxing can be, especially in certain divisions, man. It's an incredible situation. But yeah, tough guy. One of the better fighters too in the division. It's just unfortunate that he had all these all those losses. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I think if he retires without winning a world title, he'll go down as one of the best fighters to never win a world title. You know, it's a great shame. Reminds me a little bit of, I get him mixed up sometimes with, oh God, what's the guy's name? He boxed Andy Lee. He was winning the fight, got stopped. Matty Korobov. He was another guy who was nailed on to become a world champion and, you know, had the worst luck ever. You know, he got himself to 24-0, I think it was. Boxed Andy Lee, was winning the fight, ends up getting stopped. You know, then he goes and boxes Jamal Charlo. I can't remember what happened there. I think it might have been a close fight. Then he had the fight with Eubank Jr. and Eubank won because Korobov, I think, dislocated his shoulder. You know, then he come back and I think broke his ankle, you know, in his comeback fight. And that was the end of that. He hasn't boxed now in over 3 years. I think he's retired now. So, yeah, that's another one. He was such a great amateur. Yeah, anyway, getting back to it before we digress. Charles Cromwell with a good win. He's now 19-0. A TKO for him in the sixth round against Nathaniel Gallimore, now 22-8 with a draw. We also saw John Ramirez lose for the WBA Interim World Super Flyweight title. Ramirez now 13-1. A unanimous decision there over 12 for David Jimenez, now 16-1. And getting to the main event, Eddie. Now, our listeners don't know this, but we have not spoke about this at all prior to this very conversation we're having now. Devin Haney now 31-1, a majority decision in favor of Ryan Garcia, now 25-1. Obviously didn't end up fighting for the title because he came in 3 pounds and a little bit over the weight. Haney down in round 7, round 10 and round 11. Garcia deducted a point for hitting on the break quite badly in round 7. What a crazy, crazy fight, Eddie. And I tell you what, some people saw Ryan Garcia to win that fight on points as big as 22-1. Explain to me.
I feel so bad for not even putting a bet down on it, just to see, even if it was just $20. Oh,
I did, but I put a bet down on Haney to win.
Right. Well, I mean, to be quite honest, I mean, think about it. You know what I mean? That's what most people would have thought. But I had, and this is unfortunate, you know, for Haney. I always looked at Haney as really, really talented, really good. Probably, you know, one of the better guys, obviously, of the elite bunch that we talk about. And, you know, that's when you talk about Shakur, you talk about Gervonta Davis, you talk about Ryan, obviously, Teofimo, guys like that in the conversation. I would always think, you know, he's in that conversation, but I would always put him, and this is unfortunate, and I know people are going to be looking at me like, what? I always put him near the bottom, slightly above Ryan. And the reason is partially because of the punching power, but I mean, that doesn't always, you know, tell the tale. You can look at Shakur. Shakur doesn't have this, you know, big punching power, but his defensive responsibility is so much more elite, in my opinion. And I think with Devin, he takes too many unnecessary chances, which makes him a little bit more exciting and vulnerable. But it also makes him less good, that, you know, in my opinion, when I look at him versus Shakur. So, you know, and I always would pick Tank to stop him. And I know a lot of people are like, damn, pick Tank to stop. Yes. Yeah, I picked Tank to stop him. I picked him to beat Ryan because I just, you know, looked at the discipline. You know, there's a lot of flaws that he had. He didn't look good in a couple of these fights. So it's kind of hard. But I always thought he better be careful because Ryan Garcia is explosive with that left hook. And sure enough, when it happened in the first round, I was like, oh, shit, yeah, that would have been a good bet if I would actually put it. Because I was thinking, what if he caught Devin and then possibly stopped him? I was thinking that. And I said, you know what, I ain't going to say nothing because I don't want to be the only idiot, you know what I'm saying, out here. You know, I'm not a fanboy to either fighter. I'm, you know, I like both fighters. I like to see them do well. But I just was like, damn. Because of that explosive power and the lack of that Devin has, maybe Ryan may be a little more and you already seen how he did it with Tank, how he came in and he pressed the action early, trying to get him out of there. And, you know, Tank, obviously, with his high level IQ and just overall ability and ability to punch, caught him in the middle. But Devin doesn't have that. You know what I mean? No disrespect. He just kind of got it, punches hard enough to get your respect. To a degree, but not entirely enough to make you like deter you from offense altogether. And when I'm watching the fight and I'm seeing it unfold, and even after he hurt him in the first round and then Devin started taking over in those next few, always was the possibility of him getting caught again because Ryan Garcia is explosive, he's fast, he's sharp, and he knows Devin. They fought 3 times in the amateurs. Yes, it's a new moment, and they're both professionals. And, you know, Devin has taken really good to the pros, but they still know each other. And that's really – it's like when you look at Anthony Joshua fighting or Otto Wallin. They know each other. You know what I mean? The confidence is going to be a little bit more there in that regard. So I wasn't as surprised as I guess I should have been. And when I'm watching it, I'm like, wow, I wish I would have put a bet on this just to see what would happen. And damn, I would be looking like a smart guy right now. But unfortunately, I'm not because I didn't make the bet. But honestly, it was a hell of a fight. I give Devin credit because, and this is the part that I think is a problem as well. His heart and his determination and his desire to want to go at you regardless of what he should do, you know, as an intelligent fighter. I think that's where the IQ part comes in, that he really needs to brush up on and understand, because in the middle rounds, though, I mean, not the middle, it was still early, but the middle of the early rounds, was starting to get that jab active. One punch at a time, I would have basically said stay with that, because trying to get a little too active, throwing too many big shots at one time will give Ryan the opportunity to counter left hook, and that's exactly what happened. That's why I always tell my guys, don't get greedy. Do not get greedy. You start to get greedy, you're gonna get overfed. You understand what I'm saying? You're gonna take more. You're gonna get too many calories, and that's what happened to Devin there. You got a little bit too many calories in that left hook. So you know the problems that he had that I foresaw that Devin would have in the future of his career actually came about here. And unfortunately for him, he was on a hell of a trajectory, but now, you know, look what it does. Look what this does to his career going forward. Who knows, you know, what people are going to look at and what people are going to say. But I'm telling you, and I've always said this, he needed to stay very, very, I don't want to say very far away, but he needs to really tread lightly when he's dealing with, you know, conversations about fighting Tank, because that is a dangerous fight for him. And I would definitely pick him to get stopped in that fight. So, but this just illustrates that point more. Congrats to Ryan. He actually did well, but I still think there's a lot of flaws in the mistakes that he made. And I still think Devin is a better fighter. I just think that he had the recipe for that night. And I think if they fought again and Devin was a little more dedicated to what he was supposed to be dedicated to, he could win that fight. I don't want to say easily, but he could definitely win the fight.
Yeah, I completely see why you're saying that. You know, I think Haney boxed with the wrong game plan. I think Haney didn't stick to what he's best at. You know, it wasn't. I mean, he did actually show us at times that fantastic jab that Devin has, but it wasn't at times everything behind the jab. It was you know, hooking with a hooker, as they say. When we saw him box Regis Progre, he seemed to be a little bit worried about the power that Progre possessed, and everything was so precise that night, so accurate. Like I say, didn't waste anything. It was all behind the jab. The measure of distance was perfect. I think those kind of tactics would have been better against Ryan, in my opinion, because again, you know, Regis is obviously a southpaw, but he's got the power in that left hand. Garcia, obviously not a southpaw, but he you know, the power, the money shot for him is that left hook as well. So both times, I think he needed to be a little bit worried about the left hook, and I thought he could have picked some little pieces of his game plan against Progre and used them here against Ryan. But back to the actual fight itself, I'm going to run through what I thought of it. Round one, obviously, Garcia caught Haney straight away with a thunderous left hook. Devin's legs buckled. You know, Ryan jumped on him. Devin tied him up. He got caught once or twice more. Crazy opening round. You know, this is a man who actually made us all believe he was crazy going in. So he won the first round, Ryan Garcia. Round two, I gave to Haney. I think things settled down a little bit, and he seemed to be boxing quite well. Round three, I gave to Haney as well. He caught Garcia with a lovely left hook in that round. Garcia didn't have a great poker face either after taking the shot. It seemed to bother him. 2-1 Haney. I gave round four to Haney. So at this point, he's winning the fight. Round five was a better round for Garcia, but I didn't think it was enough to win the round. I felt that Haney won the round. You know, he was fully on the front foot, getting into a bit of a rhythm, and it was just exactly what I expected from Devin Haney. After a bit of a poor first round, he comes back and dominates the next three or four rounds in a row. That is exactly, to that point, how I thought the fight was going to go, and it was a very predictable first five rounds, I felt. Garcia was on the back foot. When he was on the back foot, he wasn't so effective either. Round six, this is where it starts to turn round. I gave Ryan the sixth round pretty much because he had a big 10 seconds at the start of the round, and Devin did look a little bit uncomfortable. You know, Ryan caught him with a few good shots when he was throwing his hands in combinations, but we did see a few times in that round that awful attempt at the shoulder roll where he kind of half turns his back and allows you to give him some nice shots in the kidney. I don't think he should be doing that. We've seen it before. I don't know what that was all about. I didn't like seeing that at all. I think Harvey Dock was a little bit harsh on Haney in that round. I know a lot of people are criticizing Harvey Dock for not being harsh enough on Haney with his holding. You know, what's he supposed to do when Garcia gives him that, you know, that half turnaround? He should be hitting him where he was hitting him, I felt. What else are you supposed to do? He's turning his back pretty much. But yeah, like I said, I gave Ryan that sixth round. Round seven, crazy round, obviously. Haney goes down from a looping left hook. It was a heavy knockdown. He gets back up. His legs were gone. I couldn't believe he beat the count. It looked like one of those shots where he wasn't going to get up. You know, his legs were absolutely gone. He instantly held when the referee made him continue boxing. Ryan hits him when the referee told him to break, though. That's when the point deduction comes. And I think it was, I mean, you know, he complained, Garcia, that there was no warning. I don't think it required a warning, to be totally honest. It was bad. You know, he'd hurt Haney. Sorry, dropped Haney. When they're back up in a clinch, he then hits him on the break. You know, that's a kind of a bit of a cheap shot. So I can understand why the referee would take a point there. I didn't think there was too much wrong with that. Basically, though, the knockdown had been cancelled out because they both lost a point there. Obviously, Haney was holding throughout the rest of the round and, you know, doing the right thing to get through the round, if I'm being honest. You know, he allowed himself to go down as well once or two times, like falling over, you know, holding and kind of falling on the floor and trying to take Garcia with him. It was smart stuff to buy seconds to recover. But yeah, massive Garcia round, you know, in terms of everything, really, apart from the point deduction. So a big round, but he won that round 9-8. So this is where a lot of people were losing their minds with scoring it. Round 8, though, I gave to Haney. Once again, I felt that he'd been hurt and come back in the next round and seemed to get back to his smarts. You know, he seemed to lose a round really big, get dropped, but then he'd come out and he would do well for the next few rounds. So yeah, like I say, he was hurt early on in the fight. The first round, came back, dominated. He gets dropped in the seventh. He comes back in the eighth round and did the same thing. It was a bit of a pattern. He looked good in the eighth round. Garcia didn't really do much. Haney was getting the better as the round progressed, getting the better of him. Like I say, seemed like his legs were back as well after being dropped the round prior. I gave round 9 to Haney as well. And at that point, I'm thinking to myself that maybe Ryan's lack of conditioning perhaps is coming back to bite him here. You know, he was fighting in bursts at that point. He wasn't really too effective, you know, for the majority of these rounds. Like I say, Haney had been down, he'd been hurt, he had a torrid seventh round, but he come back in the eighth and won that. And he come back in the ninth and won that. So on my scorecard at this point, I've got it 6-3 in favour of Haney. But like I say, I couldn't have been any more wrong, because in round 10, Haney gets caught again, goes down from another shot. I think it was like a combination while he was kind of trapped in a corner. And I had to say, I was really stunned by Haney's lack of defense. You know, he's usually a bit harder to hit than what we'd seen here. I understand, you know, the speed of that left hook, the way that Ryan whips it in, and not just the left hook, he's got quick hands, period. But he was really struggling with the speed, and that was so shocking to me. And for someone that usually, I think, does pretty well in terms of maintaining distance, it just wasn't that here. He's such a good fighter at maintaining distance, but I just couldn't quite understand why he was being caught this regularly. And also, when Ryan landed one good shot, at many times in the fight. He landed one good shot, and then he seemed to be able to land many after that. Like, Devin would get caught with a shot, then Ryan would have repeat, like continual success right after that. It was like, oh, he hit me with that one, and it took him a few seconds to go, oh, I better put my guard up. It was strange. So yeah, round 10 is a bad round for Haney. Like I say, big 10-8 round for Ryan. Round 11, down Haney goes again, another left hook. He loses that round 10-8. And then the 12th round, it was a close round. And on my card at this point, in terms of scores, I had it here. If Devin wins that final round, it's a draw. 112-112. And if Garcia wins it, then he wins the fight by 2 points. And unfortunately, the app, and I'm just going to say which app it is. I've got an app called Fight Score, and it's not working. So I can't remember who I gave that final round to. So I'm a bit annoyed about that, because I want to just say it was either a draw or it was to Garcia. Obviously, Devin definitely didn't win the fight. I don't think anyone felt he won. And I'm pretty sure I gave the last round to Devin, so I think I had it 112-112, which is the same as Chris Mannix. I don't know if that's controversial or not, but I thought Chris Mannix was pretty good at his scoring. Eddie, I know you're dying to come in. I'm not going to say any more on the fight. I'll let you finish it.
No, I was agreeing with you, Joe. A lot of people were like, yo, I can't believe, you know, looking at the 112 saying it was the crazy. I'm like, yo, that's not crazy. If you think about it, he won the majority of the rounds. It's just he got dropped so many times and not the best times for him. That's why the scores were the way they were. If not for Ryan doing that stupid little shot that he threw and getting the point taken off, he wins the fight regardless, in my opinion, even if Devin does win the 12th round, which I think he probably did. But it's just like you get caught up in a lot of people who are like basic fans, lay fans who don't really, you know, they watch boxing, but they don't really understand it, aren't realizing how you have to score it round by round. You gotta score it no matter what happened around before, no matter how bad the knockdown was, for the next round is a new fight, essentially. You know what I mean? You have to score it. From then, it's the last round has nothing to do with this round. You know what I mean? The round after has nothing to do with this round. You know what I mean? You can't score it that way. So just because he got dropped, yeah, the points matter. But once the points are deducted or added or whatever, right? It's that part then is over. The next round is a new round, in a sense, and essentially a new fight. If you can win that next round, no matter what happened around before, the score is going to be the same, 10-9. And this is where I think people lose focus and lose and they look at the scorecard. I can't believe this. I can't believe it. And you just don't understand it. You have to understand boxing has to be the way it's set is a 10-point must system. You understand what I'm saying? So I don't care what happened the round before. I don't care what's going to happen 5 rounds from now. It doesn't matter. As long this round is going to be scored as it is, you understand? You know, if he wins, he wins. If he doesn't, he doesn't. You know what I mean? No matter how many times he gets knocked down, there's most of the time guys only go to 10-7. You know what I mean? I don't even think sometimes they, you know, I think they used to go to 10-6, but that they said I think they frowned upon that because it takes people too far out of the fight. But regardless, wouldn't matter because if he came back the next round and knocked him down two times, then now it's the even fight. You understand what I'm saying? And this is how things go. And this is where, like, you'll hear people and you'll see the comments and people complain. Like, I can't believe they almost gave him the fight based on how could that judge have a draw? That was a good scorecard, I thought. 112-112 wasn't bad. I agree with it, Joe. I think either, like you said, either either 2 points up or a draw. That's what I saw. The 115-109, I mean, you could say that, I guess, but not really. Like, I don't really see that. I see maybe one round, you know, one way or the other. You know what I'm saying? But clearly, I agree with you 100%. Devin, definitely no. Ryan, possibly.
Well, there we go. That brings part one to a close. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the former WBA Super Lightweight World Champion and current interim WBC Welterweight World Champion. It is, of course, Mr. Mario Barrios. Mario, welcome back on the show, my brother.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure, my friend. So we last spoke back in February of last year. At the time, you were getting ready to fight Giovanni Santiago. Obviously, you got the stoppage over him in the eighth. I want to skip over that just briefly and discuss, in a nutshell, the UGAS win that came after that. You started really well in that fight, really sharp. UGAS, though, came back strong in the mid-rounds, and then you closed the show the stronger of the two. Just give me a sentence or two on that, being your most recent win. And like I say, a win against a man like UGAS solidifies your status at 147.
Yeah, you know, it was a tremendous fight. A great fighter. You know, UGAS... You know, he tried to make the adjustments in the fight. He started finding, you know, success, you know, in the earlier middle rounds. And then, I stayed listening to my corner. I stayed listening, you know, to what was working, you know, which was everything off of my jab, you know, just keeping my distance, keeping everything, you know, tight. And then, yeah, and then I ended up, you know, I put him down one more time in the 12th round. And but I feel like at that point I had already solidified that victory. But yeah, it was a performance, you know, I'm very proud of, you know, my team is very proud of, and we're gonna try to keep that momentum going.
Yeah, it was a sensational fight and win, like I say. But yeah, let's move on. You'll be boxing on that Canelo Munguia undercard against Fabian Maidana. May the 4th is the date at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. Not many people can say that they boxed on two Canelo undercards in a row, aside from being the younger brother of Marcos. What do we know about him, Mario?
Not too much, honestly. but I feel like, you know, that's what makes him, you know, so dangerous. He's been saying, you know, a lot that, you know, he's been looking, you know, for the fight, you know, to break out of his brother's shadow. And so I know, you know, that's what he's planning, you know, especially, you know, with the fight being this big. And he is, you know, a Maidana's brother, but they don't fight similar. You know, he tries to box a little bit more. He still brings that you know, that relentless pressure. So I have no doubt, you know, this fight is going to be, you know, very entertaining for the fans. But, you know, I'm going out there, you know, and I got to do, you know, whatever it takes, you know, to make sure, you know, he's not successful.
Yeah, no, for sure. I was going to say, yeah, quite a different style to his brother. He does have that punching power as well, obviously, which is a concern. But yeah, I'm confident that Bob will put together the right game plan again. What do you want to do after this fight, Mario? Obviously, again, without looking too far ahead kind of thing, but the situation right now with the belts, do you expect to be upgraded to full champion at some point, especially with the rumours any day now? We're hearing about a possible announcement for Crawford at 154.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if I'm not elevated, you know, I would love to, you know, contend, you know, with one of the ranked WBC fighters, you know, for the full title. But, you know, as of right now, you know, all of my focus and everything is just on, you know, come out victorious May 4th. Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to right now.
And talking of May the 4th once again, I'm sure that you're going to have your fight and then race straight back out to take a ringside seat. That main event, Canelo Munguia, an all Mexican war, it could be. How do you see that one going, man?
I think, you know, it's going to be exactly how you just said. You know, I think it's going to be a Mexican war. But I think ultimately, you know, I think Canelo's gonna resort, you know, just back to, you know, what, you know, his experience you know, because I mean he's been on these platforms already, you know, too many times to count. He's been in there, you know, with some big punchers, some with a lot of different fighters, and so I think ultimately his experience is gonna, you know, just start to show, and I think that's what he's gonna, you know, try to prove against the younger Munguia.
Yeah, should be a great one while it lasts. But I agree. I think it's going to be a really good fight, actually. I have to get your reaction as well to the weekend. I mean, Haney Garcia, I'm sure you've probably been asked this a million times already, but were you as surprised with the result as the rest of us, Mario?
I was, actually. No, I thought, I don't know. It kind of just seemed that Haney and them, they for sure worked on their game plan. Which, you know, I'm not too sure what it was, but it seemed they didn't work too much on, you know, protecting from that left hook. I feel like, you know, he made a lot of defensive mistakes that kind of just, you know, kept making that opening. You know, it was just kind of continuously there, and but it was one of the most entertaining ugly fights I have seen in a very long time. But like I said, I mean, it was very, very, very entertaining, you know, from the lead up, you know, to the actual fight. But yeah, no, I mean, I was definitely surprised.
Yeah, man. I mean, it was a mad, mad spectacle. Also, I've seen on social media, fantastic news. You'll soon be a father to a beautiful baby girl. How much does that add to your hunger and motivation? I'm so happy for you and obviously the family.
Thank you, my guy. No, yeah, we know we're both very excited. It's definitely, you know, it's definitely, you know, added motivation now. So, you know, like I'm gonna, you know, I have this fight May 4th, and then, you know, a few months after that, you know, that's what I have, you know, to look forward to.
Yeah, like I say, May the 4th, a couple weeks after that, your birthday, then a couple months after that, you got this to look forward to. You don't have to tell me this if you don't want to, Mario, but have you guys decided on a name just yet?
We have not. There's a we have a couple ideas right now, but haven't pulled the trigger on one yet.
I'm guessing it's not gonna fully be your choice.
No, 100% it's not.
Okay, just before we wrap things up, Mario, as I say, it's always great speaking with you. If you just want to sign out with some closing words before we let you go, like I say, fantastic to have you on again.
Yeah, no, you know, if you're, you know, buying tickets to the fight, you know, buy them quick, or, you know, make sure you buy the pay-per-view. It's going to be an entertaining night of boxing, you know, from the first fight, you know, to the main event. But I'm definitely, you know, I'm going out there, you know, trying to steal the show. So, yeah, you know, don't miss out. And, you know, as always, Joey, you know, so it's a pleasure. And thank you for having me.
The pleasure's mine, my friend. Listen, Mario, as always, thanks for your time. Best of luck for the 4th of May, and we'll speak sometime afterwards.
Thank you, Joey.
Okay, now it's time for part 2 on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. We're going to see on June the 15th at Selhurst Park, which is Crystal Palace's home football ground. That's my local football stadium from where I grew up. We're going to see Chris Billam-Smith getting in the ring with Richard Riakpor in what will be a rematch. Richard Riakpor, the only man to have beaten Chris Billam-Smith. The rematch is for Billam-Smith's WBO Cruiserweight World title. No undercard announced just yet, as far as I'm aware, but it's a good fight. Especially, you know, just to have a boxing event at Selhurst Park. I mean, that's a stadium I've been in, you know, countless times. And I just think it's a great stadium to host a boxing event. And the atmosphere is going to be electric, I think. Obviously, you know, Richard Riakpor being a Crystal Palace fan. That is it for the news. I think by the time we finish recording this show, there will be another piece of news break. And if that's the case, then I will mention it on the outro part, but I'm pretty sure there's going to be a big piece of news for a big card that at the moment while we're recording hasn't yet been announced. So before I before I start announcing the card and going off of rumors, I'm going to wait and see till the official announcement, and I'll for sure mention it towards the end of the show on the outro. So moving now to the preview part, we're going to start here at the Knowsley Leisure and Culture Park in Merseyside, United Kingdom. Over here, friend of the show, Casey Kademi, now 10-2 with two draws, stepping in with Ryan Farag, 21-5. Homecoming there for Farag. Is for the vacant Commonwealth Super Flyweight title. Casey Kademi obviously boxed for the IBO World title last time out, ended up losing very badly in the end. And he's boxing here, in another good opportunity for the Commonwealth. So yeah, I'm happy for him, but I do think it's a bit of a must-win fight, really. You know, you don't really want to be taking too many losses. And like I say, I think Iyaz Ahmed really held up his career with their three fights that they had. That really held up his career. And like I say, you know, he's he's coming off a loss, you know, albeit for an IBO world title, and that was at flyweight. He's now back at superfly, which is obviously much, much better for him. But yeah, great stuff to see him back here. It's a good fight. I really like that fight against Ryan Farag. I don't think it's going to be a walk in the park. So all the best to Casey Kademi there. And of course, his trainer, Richie Sawyer. Moving now to a place we don't usually go to, the Ajoy University in Suwon, South Korea. Over here, Hyun Mi Choi, the undefeated lady, 21-0 with a draw. She's back in a 10-2s contest for the vacant WBA Gold World Lightweight title. And she's fighting Canada's Jessica Kamara, who's 12-4. I remember Jessica Kamara being on the wrong end of a decision against Callie Reese in a fight that I felt she certainly did enough to win the world titles from Callie Reese, but a bit of a bad decision, and you know, she hasn't really done much since then, so I'm hoping that she can do something here against Hyun Mi Choi. But again, Choi's a good fighter. Moving now to the Exhibition Centre in Liverpool, Merseyside, United Kingdom. Again, this card here isn't fantastic. I think it may be a next gen. It should be a next gen. It probably is a next gen. On the undercard, we're going to see Joe McGrath. He was supposed to be fighting Jericho O'Quinn in a rematch. No, sorry, got the wrong McGrath there. Joe McGrath, 9-0. He's back in an 8-rounder against Ryan Walker, who's 12-6. Peter McGrath, he's 8-1. He was supposed to be boxing Jericho O'Quinn in a rematch. Jericho O'Quinn has pulled out. I don't know why, but he's back here in a 10-rounder, and it's a tough fight. I think he gets in with Mark Leach, who's 18-3 with a draw. May even be a better fight actually to watch. Also on the card, Maisie Rose Courtney, 5-0, gets in with Jessipina, I think that's said, Di Stefano, who's 7-2 with a draw. That's over 8-2s. We're going to see Junaid Bostan as well, 8-0. He's back in a 10-rounder against Jack Martin, who's 9-1. That could be interesting. And also, we're going to see Pat McCormack, 5-0, fighting for the vacant WBA Intercontinental Welterweight title against Williams Herrera, who's 16-3. And also, a female world title fight between Beatrice Ferreira, who's 4-0. She is stepping in with Yanina Lescano, who is 14-3. That one for the vacant IBF lightweight world title. So yeah, like I say, it's not a fantastic card, to be totally honest with you. And I think it is a next gen. It's going to be live on DAZN on Saturday night, if that's what you decide to watch. Just want to quickly have a little look, because for some reason, Pat McCormack's opponent, his name rings a bell, Williams Herrera. I do just want to have a little look. Like I say, 16-3, the record. I'm sure I've seen that name before. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, he stepped in with Paddy Donovan. He got in with Paddy Donovan back in January. Yeah, so I knew I'd seen that name before. And as for Beatrice Ferreira's opponent as well, as I say, Yanina Lescano, we've seen her before, and I am trying to remember where, and I want to say off the top of my head it was against Caroline Dubois. I think she boxed Caroline Dubois. Yeah, she boxed Caroline Dubois back in June of last year. So, yeah, quite happy with my memory there, which isn't something I say too often. Moving now to the Lyocora Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, or Lyocora Center. I don't know how it's said, but it's up by you, Eddie. It's a strange card, actually, from top to bottom. We're going to see Mushin Kaysen, who's 11-0. He is... I think he's related to Hasim Rahman. He's 11-0. Like I say, he's back in a six rounder at cruiserweight against Deshaun Webster, who's 12-7 with three draws. We're going to see friend of the show Henry Hank Lundy, who these days is 31-14 with a draw. Sad to see him racking up that many losses. He's back in a six rounder against Juan Rodriguez, who's 11-22 with a draw. Hopefully, Hank Lundy, you know, wins that one, you know, in front of his hometown crowd. Also, Philadelphia's finest, Jesse Hart on the card, 30-3. He's in an eight-rounder at light heavyweight against Daniel Aduku, who's 15-4 with a draw. We're also going to see, he doesn't have an opponent just yet, but Nikita Ababi, who's 12-0. He's back in an eight-rounder. I thought he was with Eddie Hearn and DAZN. I don't know what's going on with him. He's found himself on this strange card in Philly. We're also going to see another Philly fighter, Joey DeWaco. He's a Philly fighter, isn't he, Eddie? Joey? I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. 27-11. 27-11 with four draws. He's back in an eight-rounder at heavyweight against a guy who, because I'm British, the way I'm going to say this name is going to sound quite silly. The guy's name is Walter Burns. I guess, really, it's probably pronounced Walter Burns. But, you know, the way I'd say it is, yeah, of course Walter Burns if it's heated up or if it's come out the kettle. That's just the accent.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's Walter. So it's Walter with the L, right?
Walter, yeah. It's just the same. Yeah, it's so bad. Yeah, so Walter Burns is, or Walter Burns, whatever, is 7-1. That's at heavyweight. And also Andrew Tabiti as well, 20-2. Another one that I can't quite understand why he's on the card. 20-2. He's at heavyweight these days. He steps in with junior Anthony Wright, who's 20-5 with one draw. Again, I feel like I've seen junior Anthony Wright before. Let's have a little look. Oh, yeah. Got knocked out in a round by Arslanbek Makhmudov. Yeah, lost to Bebut Shumanov once upon a time. Okay. And then, yeah, moving to the final card to mention. It goes down at... Ooh, I've totally forgot the venue name now. Okay, forget the venue name. Doesn't really matter. But it goes down on the zone. It's gonna actually be quite a good card. We're going to see for the WBA, WBO, and WBC flyweight female world titles, Marlon Esparza, 14-1, stepping in there with Celeste Alaniz, who's 14-1 as well. Both ladies with the identical record. We're going to see Joseph Jojo Diaz, 33-5 with a draw, stepping in with Oscar Duarte, who we saw last time losing to Ryan Garcia. Ryan Garcia managed to stop him, but Duarte was, you know, very tough. He took a lot of big shots, showed a great chin, and also he can punch really hard as well. So I think this is a really tough fight because the way Jojo Diaz has been fighting recently, you know, he's looked very, very unmotivated and very, very beatable. And this guy here could be, you know, a bit too much for him to handle. I hope I'm wrong. I really like Jojo. I know a lot of people have, you know, given up with him and lost patience with him, but he's a really cool guy. So, yeah, I'd like to see him win, but I think it's going to be a really tough fight, and it could make for a good fight, to be honest, because obviously we know Diaz is extremely tough as well. So, should be a really good one, I think, there. Another fight that I don't think is going to be too great. That's a 10-rounder, by the way, Diaz against Duarte. Another fight that I don't think is going to be too great because I don't think it's going to be that much of a test, really and truly, is this next fight here. Virgil Ortiz Jr., 20-0. Still got those 20 KOs. He steps in with Thomas Delorme, 26-6 with a draw. I believe and I really could be making this up now, but this is off the top of my head, the only guy that would have boxed Ennis and Ortiz, if I'm not mistaken. Could be completely wrong. Maybe people are listening to me right now and they're screaming at the top of their lungs because I've missed one. But Jaron Ennis stopped him in one round. So, you know, I don't think Ortiz is going to be able to do it any quicker than that. You can't do it any quicker than that. Maybe he'll stop him on his ring walk. I don't know. But yeah, it was quite a good performance from Ennis to stop him in a round, because the fight before that, he'd gone the distance, gone 12 with Imantis Stanionis. And yeah, he's always been quite a tough guy, Delorme. But like I say, he's very, very inactive. Hasn't boxed now for 3 months shy of 2 years since his last fight. And that only went 3 rounds. And then, like I say, he was out the ring for almost a year because of the Ennis loss. And he only went 1 round there. So yeah, I'm expecting Virgil Ortiz to go in there and stop him, probably within 3 rounds at the very worst of things, you know. I just don't think Delorme's got it anymore. But yeah, it's always good to see Virgil Ortiz. And then in the main event, Jose Ramirez, 28-1 these days. He steps in with, I want to say, the old veteran. A little bit of me wants to say the old veteran. Rancis Barthelemy, 30-2 with a draw. It's going to be interesting, to be honest, this fight here. I know that, you know, Barthelemy's not, you know, he's not the best to watch, but I still think he's, you know, he's a bit of a boxer tricks, really, even at this point in his career. And as we know, you know, Ramirez, he's been a bit inactive in all honesty. He's only had one fight in 2020, and that was to Victor Postol. I thought he lost that fight. He won a majority decision. That was his one fight in 2020. He boxed once in 2021. He lost to Josh Taylor. He boxed once in 2022 and then once in 2023. So he's had one fight a year for the last 4 years running. So he's been very, very, very inactive. And Rancis Barthelemy, to his credit, even, you know, up there in age, he's now 37. To his credit, last time out, upset the odds against Omar Juarez. I believe he upset the odds, because Juarez was, you know, a highly touted prospect, went in there and beat him. Yeah, you know, but yeah, like I say, I don't think he's completely done. But hopefully Ramirez will be able to turn this fight into an exciting one, because like I say, Barthelemy isn't the prettiest to watch. Right, that brings the preview part to a close. I don't know if you wanted to say anything on any of those fights there, Eddie, or should I just come on with the outro?
Yeah, you're good, my man. Go ahead, take care of it. I don't really have much on that, except for the fact that Barthelemy, I remember him as, he's just sometimes hard to watch skill-wise, but he is a tough guy to deal with because he's so unorthodox. But yeah, that's it.
There we go. That brings the preview part to a close. Then in part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest, one of my favorite people in the world to interview, Mario Barrios. He's boxing on that Canelo undercard. May the 4th, all the best to him. In part two, we did the news part. And then we did the preview part. It's now time for me to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this brings episode 445 to a close. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. I was joined for the entire podcast by Fast Eddie Chambers. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners, but I do also want to thank our special guest this week, that man being Mario Barrios, the reigning interim WBC welterweight world champion. Great to have him back on the show, of course. There has been one piece of news break whilst we've been recording the show. It's the same piece that I hinted at during the interview with Mario Barrios, and of course, I also hinted at it during the news part. I said that there'd probably be a piece of news announced, you know, before we fully conclude the show, and I'll talk about it on the outro. That piece of news is that we're going to see the fight going down on August the 3rd, and it's going to be Terence Crawford stepping in the ring with Israel Madrimov for the WBA and WBO interim world super welterweight titles. Again, that's going to be on August the 3rd. The show has been put on by Riyadh Season, which obviously is, you know, Turkey Alao Sheikh, the main man from Riyadh season. He'll be putting that card on. But it is the first overseas event because it's not taking place in Saudi Arabia. It's going to be going down in Los Angeles. On the undercard of Crawford Madrimov, we're going to see some juicy fights as well. We're going to see Isaac Cruz defending his world title against Jose Valenzuela. We're going to see Andy Ruiz stepping in with Jarrell Big Baby Miller in what will be a fun fight between the two heavyweight big guys. We're also hopefully going to see Tim Tzu in the ring with Virgil Ortiz Jr., providing Virgil Ortiz wins this weekend against Thomas Delorme. We're also going to be seeing David Morrell stepping in the ring with the US contender Radivoj Kaladzic. And finally, Andy Cruz stepping in the ring with Antonio Moran. So it's a good card there. A lot to sink your teeth into. It still seems so far away, August, but you know, the way that this year's been going, it's just these months are flying through. But anyway, that brings everything to a close now. Thanks once again for tuning in to this week's podcast. That's about all from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we'll see you all again, same time next week.